Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Phil Steele in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Certain guys give you a highlight every day. This guy is Ellie De La Cruz of the Cincinnati Reds.
It's nice to be able to sit. Oh, crushed! Right center, De La Cruz points to the dugout! I think he called it! Lead-off bomb! As soon as the ball left the bat, he locked eyes in the dugout and raised the index finger to say, I told you!
You know what's amazing about that ball, John? You said it came off the bat at 110. That ball was really not even square. It looked like he got the bottom half of the ball, and he got some great extension and some great carry to it.
Unbelievable. He is really a terrific young player to watch. All right, guy always does great work. He outworks everybody. And with Big Ten Media Days going on, perfect time to bring in Phil Steele. Welcome back, sir.
Steve, it's always good to hear your voice, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you. Obviously, in a year like this, since we're going to sit here with Penn State, when you get to Penn State, you have them all over your magazine, a lot of top rankings. So when you've been looking at the Penn State rankings by positions, what are some things that jumped out at you that put you in mind to put Penn State ranked so high at positional rankings?
Well, first of all, defense. Going over the team with Coach Franklin, he pointed out that this is the deepest, most talented defensive line that he's ever had, and he's had some pretty good defensive lines coming in. They actually go three deep across the board at almost every single position on defense. Maybe one or two spots they don't go three deep, but other than that, every single unit, three deep. You look at the linebacker core, last year was inexperienced. This year they're now experienced. And the secondary, you know, this a unit that finished right at the top of my rankings last year, number four DBs at the end of last year, and this year has almost everybody back, including Kalen King. They do lose Joey Porter.
Yep.
They do lose J.R. Brown, but they got a lot of guys back. So I think the overall depth on the defense jumped out to me. Offensive line, Coach Franklin told me it was had the chance to be one of the better offensive lines he's had. It's one of the better tight end rooms in the country. And, of course, the running backs, how'd he go wrong with Nick Singleton, Catron Allen? And then you add in a guy like Tre'Shaun Potts, who did a great job in Minnesota. So the thing that I think when I got off the phone with Coach Franklin going over a squad with him, the thing that jumped out to me, Steve, was depth.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've been telling fans over and over again. I said it's one thing to look at a really good first 22. A lot of teams have a good first 22. But where are you 23 through 50? And I think that's where Penn State has made the move. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely, yeah. This is an extremely deep team. And I remember going over the team like in Coach Franklin's first year with them, and they were nowhere near deep, especially on the offensive line. That was a mismatch at that point. And now going over the team with them and seeing what he has third string, a lot of teams would be envious of that.
And no question. Penn State, obviously, the questions that will come up for James Franklin will be getting past Michigan, getting past Ohio State. So let's get to Michigan. When you look at Michigan, McCarthy's back at quarterback, the two running backs, but they have a lot of transfers in that offensive line. What did those transfers up front, in your opinion, do to their positional ranking?
Well, you know, the key, you can get Power 5 transfers, and if they don't have the experience level, you wonder about their production. And Steve, going over the team with all the coaches this year, the thing that surprised me, and it's only after you go through every single roster and every single position, was the amount of FCS transfers that made an impact. And I would ask the coaches, I'd say, you know, what's up with that? And the bottom line is this. If you come in with experience at the FCS level, and they come in with a chip on their shoulder. But in this case, these Power 5 transfers that Coach Franklin brought in all have massive amounts of experience. I mean, Drake Nugent at center, 12 starts in 21, 12 starts in 22. So he's basically going to be a third-year starter. Ladarius Henderson from Arizona State was a three-year starter at Arizona State. Miles Hinton from Stanford was a two-year starter at Stanford. So these are not Power 5 transfers that left because they weren't getting playing time. These are Power 5 transfers that were legitimate starters. And so I think they're going to be able to come in. Their offensive line coach has done a great job. In fact, I'm on the Joe Moore Award Committee. That's the committee I'm most proud to be on, Steve, because I'm the only non-offensive lineman or non-offensive line coach that's even allowed on the committee. But we've given the Joe Moore Award to Michigan each of the last 2 years, and they'll be up there as one of the candidates again this year.
Yeah, that's what struck me because, as you know, I do a lot of off-season work to start getting ready for my games. It was all the transfers that they brought in Michigan up front were also from power schools. And that's what struck me about it. And sometimes you'll get a guy, let's take Trey Potts as an example, since you brought him up. You know, he goes from Power 5 to Power 5. But, you know, in talking with him, he wants to go someplace, not just with his career, but also on the winning side of it. And I think that does play a role for some of these teams.
Absolutely. And, you know, look at the two offensive linemen coming over from Stanford. Stanford this year, I've got picked last in the Pac-12. They lost a lot from last year. So stick around Stanford, finish last in the Pac-12, or go to Michigan and perhaps contend for a national championship. And, by the way, I think this may be Jim Harbaugh's best team he's put on the field in his 9 years.
Yeah, and it starts with the quarterback. You know, where do you have the ranking with J.J. McCarthy? Because I feel like of the quarterbacks Jim has had, just you know, because he's had transfers, but I feel like this is the first one he's really developed from scratch on a collegiate level. What's your opinion on McCarthy?
I think, first of all, we're going to see a much improved J.J. McCarthy this year. And if you go back and watch the games last year, especially early on, they were playing with a leash on J.J. McCarthy. You know? And they could. I mean, you had the offensive line, you had the run game, you had the defense, the special teams. Don't go out there and mess it up. I believe they're going to let J.J. McCarthy throw the football downfield more this year. So as last year, he threw for 2,700 yards. I would expect more like 3,500 yards. Now, they're not going to abandon the run game. They've got the best set of running backs in the country. Maybe with Quorum, Edwards, Hall, Stokes, Mullings and company. In fact, Quorum might have won the Heisman Trophy had he been healthy for the Ohio State game and starred in that thing. But when I look at the quarterback spot, I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be able to throw the football downfield more and be an improved quarterback statistically as they take the reins off a little bit.
Yeah, but when it comes to quarterback room, you're really big on Talia Tungavaiola at Maryland, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, you got to go with the experience level, and Penn State, Ohio State, both do not have that experience level. And with Talia, the one thing is they will let him throw. And last year he threw for 3,000 yards, despite missing a start. So, and plus they've got a good backup in Billy Edwards. I was impressed when Edwards came on the field last year in his two games. He's a guy that's got a high football IQ. He's an Andy Dalton type of quarterback. And I think that combination of those two guys at QB gives them a pretty good depth even.
In fact, I think it was the Indiana game he came off the bench because Jack Ham and I were watching that, and Jack looked over me. He says, "This guy's pretty good. He could start for a lot of teams." Billy's a Wake Forest transfer, something like that, if I recall. I mean, but that's a good room.
Wake Forest. Yeah, 6'3", 215 pounds, and he's a guy that, you know, he's athletic. He's a guy that can run the football, but I thought last year, as you pointed out, you go back to that game that he played, you know, he threw the ball pretty good. He had 61% of his passes last year. You got to like 3 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Yeah. That last number is the number that the coaches love, the no interceptions.
Yep.
Ohio State, Kyle McCord has to step in there. So what's the read when you talk to Ryan Day about what he thinks of Kyle McCord? Because obviously it does not hurt the cause that Marvin Harrison is one of the guys that throws.
Yeah, and Steve, I talked to 123 of the 133 head coaches, did not talk to Coach Ryan Day, so didn't get anything specific from him. However, poor Kyle McCord throwing to Marvin Harrison and Igbuka and Fleming and the recruiting that they do there. It's the best receiving corps in the country. In fact, they may have the top two receivers in the country. You look at the running back corps. Remember last year they got banged up. Trevion Henderson, Mayan Williams. Yeah. They had a Chip Trainum was a running back at Arizona State, was playing linebacker for Ohio State, had to move into the running back room where he still is this year. Right. But so they're going to be much better there at running back. My concern would be the tackles. They've got two new tackles, and I don't know if either one is going to be close to last year. But Kyle McCord will have a good year. And you know, Ohio State first-year starting quarterbacks, I think they've had the best quarterback in the Big Ten 9 of the last 10 years, despite having numerous first-year starters. So at the end of the year, Kyle McCord will probably be a Heisman candidate playing with this offense and that defense. In fact, I rate Ohio State number 2 in my power poll, the second most talented team overall in the country. However, you look at their road games, they got to play Notre Dame on the road. That's not going to be easy. They got to play Wisconsin on the road the week after they play Penn State, and they got to play Michigan on the road. So, toughest schedule of the top three teams in the Big Ten East.
Yeah, when it came to voting for player of the year last year in the Big Ten, I actually voted for Marvin Harrison. I just thought he was that good. That's just
wow. That's a good vote. That's a good vote.
Yeah, they didn't drum me out for it, so that was good. On the national scene, the three teams that we just talked about, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, will all play a role on the national scene, but others will play a role as well. So when we go down south and we take a look at the SEC, Georgia and Alabama will be two that will come up right away. Are there any legitimate challengers in your mind to them in their respective divisions?
Yeah, I think with Georgia, the big player is going to be Tennessee, and it's going to be, can Joe Milton have a type of year like Hendon Hooker did? Now, NFL scouts are drooling over this guy. I mean, he's 6'5", 242, can throw a football 90 yards. He's been in the offense 3 years, did well in his final two starts. But Hendon Hooker, and you pointed it out, coaches love that low final number. Mm-hmm. He had a 27-2 ratio last year, just two interceptions. Yeah. Can Joe Milton do that? That's going to be the key for them, because Tennessee's got a better defense. They get Georgia at home, which is big, but I do have Georgia winning the East. Now, the West, I think there are some contenders. So let's face it, Alabama's an inexperienced squad this year. Mm-hmm. They only have 5 starters back on offense, 5 on defense, don't even know who their quarterback is. But they get LSU at home, which I think is big. Brian Kelly will have a better team his second year than they did last year, and last year they did beat Bama. And of all the main contenders, there's only 2 that have veteran quarterbacks this year. One is Michigan with McCarthy, and then the other is LSU with Jaden Daniels. And Jaden Daniels, they took the reins off him in the second half of the year, and that's when LSU was playing their best ball. So I think LSU's legitimate contender. And then I'm going to throw a surprise at you, Steve, and that's Texas A&M. And Texas A&M, Texas A&M is my number one.
I'm laughing because I was just about to ask that question. That's why I'm laughing.
Perfect. Yeah. You know, A&M's my number one most improved team in the country. And when I was talking to Coach Jimbo Fisher and going over the squad with him last year, Steve, we'd get to the end of the position, and I always ask for a recap. And like the offensive line, he said, Phil, we're going to have one of the best offensive lines in the country next year. That next year followed a lot of the categories. Last year they were number 124 in my experience chart, and this year they're all the way up to number 14. And keep in mind, last year they lost their top wide receiver, Anaya Smith, after 4 games. They had to start 3 different quarterbacks due to injuries. The defense was banged up. The offensive line was banged up and playing a lot of freshmen. Well, guess what? This year, they're number 14 on my experience chart. They got 10 starters back on offense, 10 on defense. You know, Jimbo Fisher's brought in top recruiting classes, classes that are just like Alabama, just like LSU. In fact, the number one recruiting class last year, they now have experience. And last year, these guys waffled through a 5-7 season, Steve, and yet they beat LSU 38-23. And the Alabama game, they played that on the road in Tuscaloosa. Last play of the game. They're down by four at the Alabama 2-yard line, throwing with a chance to win the game. They could have beaten Alabama and LSU last year in a 5-7 year. Now they're going to have experience. Now they've got the talent. And I think with Bobby Petrino taking over to play calling, that's going to be a plus. They've got a veteran quarterback now in Wegman. LSU could be that surprise team that wins the West and could be a surprise playoff contender.
Or Texas A&M.
Texas A&M. Sorry about that.
And I agree with you. I mean, that they are, because of last year, people will look at them with skepticism. I think it'll prove out after the opening month that skepticism will go away. That's just me. A year from now.
I agree.
Go ahead.
People were saying about A&M this year, they say everybody's had been high on them for the last couple of years. The last time I had them on my surprise team list was 2020. That's the year they almost made the playoff. In fact, they finished number four in the country. I have not had them on my surprise team list or most improved list either of the last 2 years.
A year from now when we do this, there'll be other times we'll talk during the year, but a year from now when we do this, we'll be talking about USC going into the Big Ten. Right now, USC is right there in the Pac-12. Where do you see the job Lincoln Riley has done, and especially the job he's done in the transfer portal to form this team?
Yeah, and you know, when I talked to Coach Riley going over his squad with him this year, the defense was our main part of our conversation. He knew they had to improve it. They don't have to be a dominant defensive team, not with Caleb Williams, my number three set of receivers, a veteran offensive line, veteran running backs. They're going to put up points. They just have to be good, and I think they can be. He brought in Bear Alexander from Georgia. He was my number six rated defensive lineman out of high school. He's 315 pounds in the middle. Anthony Lucas, 295-pound defensive end from Texas A&M, number six-rated defensive lineman. They brought in Mason Cobb, who was one of the top tacklers at Oklahoma State. One of the top cornerbacks in the Pac-12 last year was Christian Rolland-Wallace from Arizona. He comes in. So the defense has got a lot of upgrades. I think they will be good enough on defense. Not dominant, but nine starters are back. And then offensively, they'll be potent as long as Caleb Williams stays healthy. And we saw what could happen last year. Remember, Caleb Williams got injured at the start of that Pac-12 title game. And ended up taking six sacks. He wasn't the same quarterback in that game, and they ended up getting blown out. But if he had stayed healthy, they would have made the playoff last year. They do have to play Notre Dame and Oregon on the road. A couple of games they might be a slight underdog in. But this team's capable. I've got them as my favorite to win the Pac-12, and they are capable of making another run at the playoff.
I think they're a team, if they can crack the 30-point barrier almost every time out, they'll win those games. I mean, it'll be the games that when somebody holds them under 30, if it does happen, that will be the game that they're in trouble.
And I think the defense will be improved enough where maybe that number comes down to 24.
That's a good point. I'm gonna remember that as we go through this. I do want to ask you about Notre Dame, because obviously there's been, you know, some changes there with what's been going on. Buckner's now down at Alabama. How do you look at Notre Dame?
Well, I'm really bullish on Notre Dame this year. In fact, I think Ohio State's going to have their hands full week four. You look at them defensively. They are all three units rank in my top units. Defensive backs number nine, linebackers number seven. Marcus Freeman knows defense. He's got eight starters back on that side of the ball. Offensive line, this is a really good group. They've got, you know, where I said Ohio State's got question marks at tackle. Notre Dame doesn't have question marks at tackle. They got Blake Fisher and Joe Alt, two guys that the NFL scouts are wild about. This is a veteran offensive line. Receiving core, that's probably your biggest question mark on the entire team. Yeah. But they move Chris Tyree from running back to slot back because they're so deep at running back. They bring in Tobias Merriweather, who got his feet wet as a sophomore. I think he'll have a better year. And the tight ends look promising. But it's a solid run game. They've got Estime and Price and Ford. And then last year, they used a backup quarterback all year in Pine. This year, they go to one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Sam Hartman. I mean, this guy did wonders at Wake Forest. And now he's running this offense with the talented supporting cast. They get Ohio State at home. They get USC at home. I can see them winning both those games. The only game I've gotten a true underdog in all year is at Clemson. And if they go 11-1 at that point, I think they'd have a great shot at making a playoff. So watch out for Notre Dame.
I know I did. I might as well just throw this in. Tell everybody your final four. It is?
Final four, I'm going with Georgia. Alabama, yeah. Never discount Nick Saban.
Nope.
Michigan, yep. They've got the best schedule of the Big Ten East teams. And then I'm going with Clemson. And the thing is, if you look at the ACC this year, Florida State's going to be the preseason favorite to win the ACC and ranked higher in the AP poll at the start of the year. But I like Clemson. And going over the team with Coach Sweeney, he told me that while this defensive line doesn't have the star power of 2018, you remember 2018, they had all those first-round draft picks, one of the best defensive lines in college football. He said this group's actually deeper in talent and experience than that 2018 squad. They've got Carter and Trotter at linebacker. I think bringing in Garrett Riley, who took TCU's defense to new heights last year, he's got Cade Klubnik at QB, Shipley Amafa at running back, and a solid offensive line. Their two toughest games are Florida State and Notre Dame. They get them both at home. They've lost one home game the last 6 years. I've got Clemson favored in all 12 games. So despite the fact they're only number six in my power poll, I have number two in the country.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of Clemson's practice before the ACC championship game because I was doing a basketball game down there. A lot of athletes. I was like, wow, a lot of athletes. Phil, where can they get the publication so people can start loading up and getting ready for the season?
I appreciate that, Steve. Now, it's different than past years. In past years, you go to your Walmart or any grocery store and pick it up. But this year, it's exclusively at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So if you're looking for the brick-and-mortar stores and you want to get the copy in your hands today, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million are the two exclusive locations. Don't waste your gas money looking elsewhere. Or you can go to philsteele.com.
Yep.
And the
yep.
interesting thing about philsteele.com, I'm going to charge you a shipping charge when you order it. Naturally, it costs to ship things. However, we give you the hard copy, which you order, and then we'll give you the digital copy for free. And the digital copy gets updated all the way through September. So as an example, on the Northwestern page, if you look at the head coach, we've got David Braun as the head coach in the digital version. So we circle players that are out for the year, get both the hard copy and the digital copy at philsteele.com. Once again, if you're out and about looking for it, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million exclusively.
What do you say we do this again about a month in and see how things are going?
Oh, I can't wait, Steve. I always enjoy our conversations. You know I like talking football with you.
Absolutely, Phil. What a pleasure on my part and for the audience. Thanks so much, my friend. The best publication out there for college football. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. It's great talking to you again.
The great Phil Steele, Neil Coulon, final half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. A lot about Saquon Barkley. I know we had Neil on the show yesterday, but I don't want to revisit with Neil about Saquon Barkley. Sir, always a pleasure.
It is great to be on the other end. And welcome back yourselves to the best day of the week that's not Friday, Saturday, and sometimes Sunday.
Sometimes Sunday, depending on what time of the year it happens to be. This is...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the record of a certain team.
Yes. Yes. Now, let's get to the record of running backs that don't have contracts. Josh Jacobs... Tony Pollard, Saquon Barkley, back in today's game.
Really, all of this boils down to the presence of the artificial instrument the franchise tag. Because right now, what that says is these guys are worth a little bit north of $10 million. However a team uses them, though, is arbitrary to that. It's based, ironically, solely on the market. Now, when you have multiple comparables in terms of contract, nothing else, determining the value of that artificial instrument actually could have this. Now, what's interesting to me is that it's the whole thing for running backs is upside down, and to some degree, it's connected with the fact that for the quarterbacks, it's the most valuable negotiating point that they'll have. So it's the opposite situation. People just say, well, get rid of the franchise tag. Franchise tag today benefits players more than it hurts them.
Right.
I mean, I get long-term. The idea, if we accept the idea is to negotiate a long-term contract, the franchise tag helps more players than it hurts because it set the floor. For the running backs, that floor is well below their peers. And at the end of the day, what this really indicates is touches are not valued at all. So the amount of carries that Josh Jacobs gets is not relevant even to his production. It's very easy for a team, especially at the value that it is, and the value, if anything, it's gone down in the years really since Adrian Peterson. That was kind of the end of the real dominant running back era. Since then, you see far more players under a strategy of we draft him, we play him 4, maybe 5 years, we have a team option if he's a first-round guy, then we tag him. We're getting 6 years out of this player. 6 years is a pretty reasonably long NFL career.
Yes.
People all
yeah.
want players to play for 12, 13 seasons.
Right.
That's not even, statistically, it's not likely at all. So what the market is really saying, and we've seen this with several examples, especially recently, these players are not going to be worth very much after year 5, year 6. So bluntly, why is a team going to commit long-term dollars to them? The running backs are getting together, and last I saw is they have a group text going to discuss their options. I'm not sure what that means, but I would love to hear what they feel their options are. At the end of the day, they are to some degree hamstrung by the tag, but the fact of the matter is there are just too many good ones coming into the NFL every year, along with, I don't want to say a declining use of them, because obviously they're used plenty. You know, Saquon Barkley gets the ball an awful lot.
Yeah.
It's the position that they're in, in how that's defined as far as the franchise tag is concerned. That lumps into a very specific category of players that are getting beaten up, perhaps more than others, at the detriment of their overall ability. You know, offensive linemen can get beat up and they can go still perform by and large. Running backs, if you're down a little bit, you're not going to be nearly as effective, and there's probably going to be somebody to come in and take your job. You look at Najee Harris in Pittsburgh. You heard me talk about this for, the full season and the offseason. I don't think that there is a significant difference between Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris.
Right.
Jaylen Warren was an undrafted rookie last year. Right. Najee Harris was the 22nd overall pick in the draft. I don't think you can describe the problem any better than that. They're just too close. Whatever it is about Najee Harris that makes him 22 overall and Jaylen Warren undrafted, for them to be as competitively close as they were only suggests that the skills of the high-end running backs are really not that much different than NFL-worthy players that can come in and fill similar roles. That's going to decrease the value of the monetary value of the position. It doesn't mean that they're not effective on the field. It doesn't mean that some of them are not really good players like the ones we're talking about. But the rest of that market drags everybody else down. And I don't know if there is a way to reconcile that.
Yeah, so let's talk about the analytics part of it, because analytics does enter into a lot of the thought process of management these days in various sports. For some odd reason, things like instinct and feel is being cast aside because numbers are telling people what to do. That's why the ones with instinct and feel win. I'll get back to you on that later. But the value of the running back position has been devalued in analytics. Why?
If I was to put my finger on one answer, I would say it's rooted in efficiency. It doesn't take Bill Walsh to see that throwing the ball 18 yards down the field is more effective than running it for three. It's harder to break bigger runs. You get fewer chunk plays. And the way offenses are constructed now, with the benefit of the rules and an obvious passive desire of the league to ramp up scoring at all costs, more money is going in my opinion, to two places that really kind of devalue the running back in general. One, your quarterback. I think that doesn't need to be said. It's obvious why they're getting paid the most.
Yep.
Two, it's your offensive coach.
Yep.
When you have Sean Payton pulling in $20 million, and Sean Payton's a guy that utilizes a multifaceted running back who doesn't need to be on the field all the time contributing. He's going to make hay out of Alvin Kamara. But he can exist in an offense with a good quarterback that can move the ball around and let the system, in their words, kind of dictate everything. That stands in the face of your point, which I agree with. I don't think the running back is the problem. I think the running game is the issue at bay here.
Yes.
Effective offenses have running backs with 5.5 yards carry. Mm-hmm. They're not getting the ball 25 times a game, but why do we need to define a running back as that? I hate to say this, especially around potentially a Pittsburgh audience, because I know how much they love hearing this. Le'Veon Bell hit the nail on the head when he was discussing this. He's the top running back on the team, and he's the second-best receiver on the team.
Yep.
So the idea of if he's getting the ball that much, if he's that prominent of a player in the offense, you're paying an offensive player. Does it matter what title he is in a fantasy football team? Does it matter where he's getting the ball as much?
Right.
He's making plays. The offense is largely, in the case of Bell in his heyday, it's largely as productive as it was because of how multifaceted he was. That obviously didn't last, but I don't think that answers the problem either. Why can't you just give him a three-year contract then? You know, last I heard, and maybe you have more insight to this than I do, Saquon Barkley and the Giants were close on a three-year deal. That's probably the right number.
They were.
So it only makes sense. If you're going to pay that valuation, which I think is reasonable for Barkley, the team captain, a guy that's carrying a huge amount of water for your offense, you're going to use him a lot of ways. Challenge then should be on the coach, whereas it kind of seems to want to be flipped around. You know, I need guys to come in and play my system, which incidentally is really why Bell was mm-hmm. out in New York. It was the addition of Adam Gase and all of his success and genius in the NFL. He didn't want to utilize a three-down running back. He didn't want to utilize a running back in the passing game. I don't see why you can't do that. And if you're doing that from that perspective, wanting to pay him, the difference between $10 million and $13 million, It's not significant in the long term. On a three-year deal, this is a player that, you know what, maybe you have to pay for 1 year to take the last 2 years of his prime. I don't think that's such a big risk for a player like Saquon Barkley.
Right.
That's just me. But for me, the challenge is, okay, Brian Daboll, in my opinion, one of the two or three best offensive minds in the game, clearly showed to be up to the task of being the head coach of the team last year, figure out a way to make hay with Saquon Barkley. You're getting paid $12 million a year. I really think that's a challenge you should embrace. Make it happen. Now he's going to be out training camp. There's no way you could expect him to go to training camp.
Right.
He might not play during the season.
Right.
And for what? $3 million on a contract that you're not, you know, given guaranteed the first 2 years. Third year, let's see what happens. But $3 million over 3 years, $9 million total, you might not have to pay the last three. I don't think that's significant enough to merit all of this. And the reason I say that is because you can be efficient as an offense if you have the threat of a guy like that in the backfield. So you don't have to give him the ball that much. He needs to be there, and he needs to get it often enough that teams are going to be afraid of it. So the right type of player, which I feel Barkley is, that makes sense. It's silly. You know, from what I heard, the difference in dollars on each side, I think it's silly. I don't want to hear about how much money they just paid the quarterback. Right. You know the situation you were in. You should have been able to make that work.
I always look at production. I need yards. I need touchdowns. So just from the rushing point of view, we know Barkley's an effective receiver. So we'll keep it on Saquon. Barkley is more offensively efficient than Josh Jacobs or Tony Pollard, right? Because of the receiving part of it. If I'm seeing 1,300 yards rushing from scrimmage and 10 touchdowns, and then, what, six? I don't know how many receptions he had last year. I mean, he's got between almost 2,000 yards in production. Isn't that what I'm looking for, yards and touchdowns?
And to suggest that a rookie can just step on the field and know all of that now, I think where this is all going, we're going to get to a point where while we feasted on that over the last decade, two decades, that the increase of the passing game, more running backs at the college level got more exposure. They were playing more. They learned more things. They're not going to get as much out of the backfield in a pro-style offense. They're not going to have that much experience coming into the NFL. So you're not going to be able to just plug them in, which is, you know, the natural thought. Everybody feels that that's what's going to happen. That's what you can do. And that stands in the way of my point of Harris versus Warren.
But right.
It's not that simple. Saquon Barkley is noticeably better than both of those two players, okay? Somebody's going to need to get paid, all right? That's not just to suggest Josh Jacobs doesn't deserve it. Jonathan Taylor is going to be in the same soup next year. It's not that these guys don't deserve it. What I would say is, really, for Barkley, this is the biggest failure of the Giants more than anything. If you don't want to pay him market value today plus 4 years of inflation or whatever else, if you are not interested in paying the player that, do not draft him in the first round. It's that simple. You should have made this decision 4 years ago.
Yes.
What has Saquon Barkley done to not validate the faith that you put in him when you took him that high? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He's going to be there. Maybe he only lasts another 3 years, but is that big of a deal? I don't see the problem with it. So to turn face now, and yes, to be fair, there's a different front office in charge, but
sure,
to turn face now after you've set this up, after you've built it, on one of the most explosive offensive players in the game, you're not saving anything. You're not bringing in any value. Your team got worse because of this. All for, you know, respect money, not, you know, back-breaking money. You're able to pay that. It makes sense. You signed a dominant defensive player that you should have. You signed a quarterback. I feel that you gave him market-level extension, which you should have.
Yep.
No
yep.
reason why Barkley should be playing on the tag, in my opinion. You could pay all three of these guys.
But then, yeah, again, it goes back. You talk about the group text or whatever it is among running backs. They know now that they are fighting for their financial well-being here because the position, and I firmly believe it's because of analytics. I mean, and also, here's another part to it. The Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl with Isaiah Pacheco and Nathan McKinnon as their two primary running backs. Neither one are top shelf, but they had Patrick Mahomes. Sometimes I feel like stuff like that does enter into the thought process. And Bill Walsh, by the way, had Roger Craig.
Yeah, Bill Walsh was the king of utilizing the running back in a horizontal game. And that's McKinnon defined. That's been his career. He's been effective for four different teams doing
that. Yeah, sure is.
The irony of the group text is, like, you guys aren't the ones that should be having that. It should be the ones in college.
Yep.
You're not going to be able to make a stand and force them to call you a wide receiver. None of that is going to work, okay? That's a union issue if you want to bring that up. Good luck. It's probably not going to work because, frankly, the quarterbacks want the tag. Lamar Jackson got paid because of the tag.
Yep.
Teams cannot take on that big of a cap hit. It's the only position they can do that with. They're not changing the rules to the detriment of the quarterback. You can find veteran journeyman players. Dalvin Cook is still unsigned. I feel he can still be a successful player. Saquon Barkley probably would get something around the franchise tag amount on an extension elsewhere. But starting over at this point in his career, starting over the Giants this late in the season, it's a mistake for both sides. Analytics can only tell you so much of what's going on in the field. What about the locker room?
Yeah.
What about the things that it's not tracking? Knowing how to pick up a blitz, knowing exactly where your quarterback wants to go with the ball, being able to run, a very underrated part of Saquon Barkley. There's not an offensive scheme he can't run. Okay, he's a brilliant outside zone runner, and he might be a better inside zone runner. He can run stretch, he can run power. You can do anything with a guy like that. If it eliminates the need for a position or two, you can kind of cut that off of his salary. The value in the passing game, that's where analytics really should show you that an outlet receiver, a big play receiver, a guy that can create negative matchups for a defense, there's value to all of that. It might not come out necessarily in the numbers, but unless you're looking at it, the value of third and eight is exponentially higher than an 8-yard reception is.
Yep.
But an 8-yard reception is not going to look good on a stat sheet. A guy like Barkley can catch that at three and make five more out of it. How the Giants just beat the Vikings when Kirk Cousins is roasted for throwing the ball, the only place he could have thrown the ball in that situation. Mm-hmm. What if that's Barkley? Barkley has a much better chance to outrun a linebacker, to put it mildly.
Yep.
You have that weapon. You have that short space player that can make somebody miss and go much further. Analytics won't show that as clearly. And if you want to be a slave to analytics, okay, I'm an analytics guy. I believe in data. But you cannot exist in a vacuum of film or of data. They need to be married together, and you need to look at both of them. I just think, reasonably speaking, $12.5 to $13 million a season over 3 years is really not that big of a deal. That's kind of the going rate for the high-end running back now. Vikings got a lot of hay out of Dalvin Cook.
Yep.
They did well with him. Wasn't going to last longer than that. That's kind of the nature of the position. That's a separate problem, though. You could set him up for a shorter deal, given the money that he's earned, given the respect that he's earned, and let him be a leader for your team. If he's not the absolute top offensive guy for the next 34 games, all right, but everything you know today is that he's probably going to be, and that's the right move to make.
I will close this with data. Simple data. Daniel Jones, what does Saquon Barkley mean to him? This is from CBSSports.com. Without Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones has 16 touchdown passes and 17 interceptions. 6.2 yards per attempt, passer rating 77. With Saquon Barkley, 44 touchdown passes, 17 interceptions, 6.9 yards per attempt, 91.4 passer rating. I think the running back helps the quarterback. Okay. Always.
It's basically the difference between a high contract player and Mitchell Trubisky. You know, that decision makes itself right there, in my opinion.
Tuesdays are always better with Neil. Thank you, sir.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong on the fascinating topic of Saquon Barkley. All right, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Thanks for joining us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.